Welcome aboard, everyone. This is the Rosh Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Rose off today, and Justin Kaufman is sitting in this afternoon.
This guy's back.
You're back with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Nice. I'm happy
beautiful,
you're here.
Cold, chilly day
it, does
to
it
do
feel,
radio
what
show.
Is it, March, early March-ish? Yeah. I was trying to decide myself. Does it feel kind of like that chill is in the air that you just don't expect
yeah,
this
I think
time
I'm
of year?
Call the furniture, or the furniture, the furnace people, and get a tune-up, get the heat on tonight. What
seriously.
Do you think?
We need to go on. I think we should all go camp out on Rose deck because he's got the fire pit out there.
Right.
And I'm sure he'd appreciate that if we all just showed up unannounced and sat there on his deck. You've got the, he'd like that.
Let's do it.
Right? Everybody in?
I'm in.
So in.
He'd love it. I mean, really, because he loves us. So he wouldn't care. He wouldn't care. Be a party. Kev, we want to go back to something you said in the sports there, because we all are terribly concerned about the kicker situation for Bears, and it also seems as if the Bears are terribly concerned about the kicker situation. They are putting so much pressure on, what do we have, two candidates left?
Yeah, Eddie Pinheiro and Elliot Fry.
Okay, they got rid of the Blewett guy yesterday. Right. He was released because he didn't make a kick. Is that right?
I don't know if it was specifically because yesterday or 2 days ago in practice, all three of the kickers missed kicks, 42 yarders, and I guess they just had seen enough of Blewett, so down to two now.
Okay, so I feel like psychologically damaged for them because of the amount of didn't they say, well, hey, we're not gonna do the drills or some kind of the training camp stuff if you make these kicks, but if you don't, then the entire team is going to suffer for you. I mean, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I love the pressure they're putting on them. I mean, you need this sort of pressure because maybe you'll be in the playoffs again and maybe you'll need a guy to make a game-winning kick. So today Matt Nagy had the two guys line up and attempt 40 yarders. If they miss, they were going to do gassers, burners, whatever you call them, basically sprints, runs, after practice completed. They both made them, and they didn't have to run.
Here's my last night, Scott Van Pelt had a whole thing on the Bears kicker situation, which I was surprised by. And he mentioned this point about they cut Cody Parkey because we wanted to move on from this, that they wanted to move on from all of this controversy, and they wanted to start fresh this year. But this circus that's happening right now, showing off these kickers and talking about 42 yards and 43 yards and all this kind of stuff, is just making Bears fans relive what happened in the playoffs. There's some psychological component to moving on and stop reporting and doing all this sort of special stuff about what the kicker situation is in June.
Yeah, I disagree. I actually like what they're doing. They're hitting it, you know, square on. They're not running from it. They're not hiding from the fact that they have a kicker problem. They're addressing it the way they think they need to address it, and they're putting a bunch of pressure on the kickers. I like what they're doing with it.
It's one of those positions, too. It's a pressure position.
Yeah, exactly. But you need to put the pressure
on it. To me, it's not really an argument about the pressure of the kicker. It's an argument about why this is becoming the story of the 2019 Chicago Bears.
Well, because the way it ended. And
move
they don't
on
have,
from
they
it.
Don't
move
have,
on
who
from
can
it,
forget
how do you,
that?
How do you talk about Khalil Mack. Talk about the
we
running
do.
Backs and move on.
We do.
No, we don't. Every single Bears story.
Well, we are most
all
worried
of the media
about
has
the kicker
thing. Kicker,
kicker. Guys, I'm going to break this up and ask everyone to just be quiet for just a moment because we do have some breaking news and Kim Gordon wants to break in with something. Then we'll return to the chaos over here.
Yes, Kim. It looks like we have a changing of the guard in the White House press office. President Trump just telling everyone that after 3.5 years, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is leaving the White House.
Wow.
Not altogether unexpected. She sort of, there were a lot of stories about that she might not make it into the fall and that kind of thing, but no name on a replacement, right?
Not yet. She's leaving, so we were hoping for the mooch.
Oh,
there you
he
go.
He lasted 11 days, maybe.
Yeah, another
11
day stint.
He's come back in for a few days.
Well, you know, with this story, because it'll be a big story because of Sarah Huckabee Sanders being controversial, but how long do press secretaries usually last in the White House? If you think about Obama and even before that, George W. Bush, it was usually one term. You didn't have somebody who actually stayed the entire
time. 3.5 years
is a long time. It is a long time, yeah. Mm-hmm. So she served well for what the president wanted out of the White House, and time to move on to somebody else.
Yeah, you speak about pressure. I think that job has much more pressure than it has in years past because you didn't used to take every single one of those news conferences live on all the cable networks, for sure. And certainly, you've had a lot of nuggets make news out of that on a daily basis.
Maybe, Kev, they can have two press secretaries try out and just keep responding.
I like
that.
Put the pressure on them. That's a pressure-filled job as well.
Okay, if you do it, then everyone gets to go home. If not, we're all staying here until midnight, and we're going to work and work and work.
They have to run burpees if they get the White House statement wrong.
No one eats until you get every fact right. So start talking for 4 hours. We'll see. We'll see who replaces her. That is a tough
Tough. Maybe Cody Parkey. He's looking for a job.
Oh,
there you go. Full
he's available. Yeah. And maybe the Mooch could come and kick for the Bears. Try him out. See how he does.
Oh,
I don't think he has any sports skills. All right. We're going to check in with someone who does have sports skills. Joe Donlan, principal anchor for WGN-TV News. He is, in addition to being a news anchor and one of our friends of the show and friends of Kevin and Roe in particular, he is also, he played hockey. So he's got some thoughts about the St. Louis Blues winning their first Stanley Cup in half a century. And he'll tell us what's coming up on the WGN-TV News. It's the Roe Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Justin Kaufman in for Roe today. He's taken the afternoon off. And Kim Gordon broke in with the news. Sarah Sanders is stepping down as White House press secretary. And everyone said 3.5 years.
That's what the president
tweeted. He said after 3.5 years. And people said, did Obama hire her? No, that's not the case. So
Trump was the one who said 3.5 years.
In his tweet just 13 minutes ago, the president wrote, after 3.5 years, our wonderful Sarah Huckabee Sanders will be leaving the White House at the end of the month, going home to the great state of Arkansas. Hmm.
Well, he's only been president for 2 years and 4 months. So that's not possible. Maybe he's talking about a year before in the campaign.
Worked for the campaign?
But the idea being leaving, he wasn't in the White House. So.
There you go.
There's
an error there.
Acting
surprise.
Sort of let's find some clarity in the Trump tweet.
Impossible.
It is what it is.
Anyway, she's stepping down, and a new replacement will be announced shortly, so we'll keep on top of that. But right now, we're going to head over to Bradley Place and talk to WGN-TV principal anchor Joe Donlan. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Anna. How are you, Justin? How's it going?
Hey,
any word that maybe Sean Spicer might be coming back?
What do you think?
Well, what do you think about a reality show to represent the reality president, show president?
President Trump
would never do that.
Like a live boardroom?
That would never happen, Justin. Just stop throwing out crazy ideas.
Right? I think it's great.
Yeah, brilliant.
We want to talk a little hockey with you because I'm sure you were tuned to last night, St. Louis Blues winning their first Stanley Cup ever in the franchise's 52-year history. Right. They waited a long time, and I guess we have to be happy for them, even though we'd love it if our beloved Blackhawks were there instead.
Sure. It's curious to me. I'm not sure where Blackhawk fans are on this, but I have to, in all truth and honesty here, I'm from St. Louis. So I was thrilled for the Blues last night. And I was trying to figure out if Blackhawk fans were rooting for the Blues or the Bruins. And I think it wasn't that they were rooting for, but I think they didn't like the Bruins more than they didn't like the Blues. But I'm here to just give these Blackhawk fans 4 reasons that they should be okay with this.
I like that. Yes.
Okay.
Let's hear it, because we need to feel more okay, because I got to be honest, I am not okay right now.
Okay.
Hopefully this helps.
Listicle. Number one, you just pointed out, they've never won. And I'm kind of an underdog guy, so I like a team that's never won the Stanley Cup. It's pretty awesome. Number two, I'll give you three more reasons. The Hawk fans know how this felt in 2010. They'd gone through a drought, hadn't won since 61.
50 years.
Yeah, so they know how this feels after that kind of a drought. The coach, Craig Berube, coached for the Chicago Wolves in 2016 for a season. Okay. Their goalie, Jordan Binnington, played for the Wolves more than 100 games for 3 years. Oh. And if you're not convinced yet, Anna, here's one more.
I'm just happy for those individual people so far.
Mm-hmm. To quote Chris Bryant, there's not a lot going on in St. Louis. This gives them something to celebrate.
Yes.
So there are,
how
I don't
true.
Know, 5 reasons you should be okay with that?
How true.
Yeah.
Everybody on the team okay with this, that St. Louis won the Stanley Cup? Kev, you okay with this?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was just kind of hoping for a good series. And I wouldn't say it was a great series. There was definitely some good moments and some tight games. But, I think they're going to win at some point, right? I mean, this is a town that knows a little something about championship droughts, so I'll give them one.
Well,
throw them a bone.
I'm an unusual St. Louis fan. I'm an anomaly because I grew up rooting for the Blues and the Blackhawks. I mean, when we played street hockey, if you were in the net, you were Tony Esposito.
Yeah.
And if you were out on the ice or on the street, you were Bobby Hull. You know, there was just sort of, there wasn't the rivalry or the hatred, I guess, that there exists now between the Blues and the Blackhawks, at least when I remember growing up. But I also, as a result, have this little show and tell.
Oh,
check this out.
On CLTV, you're holding
you
up.
You see this. Unfortunately, on the radio, you just got to trust
me. But we'll
me.
Describe
this
it.
This is a calendar I got in 1970. At calendar night at the Blues game. And
nice.
You can see the December picture is the Blackhawks. And I
awesome.
You can see some of these signatures, right? I got to play with the Blackhawk alumni team in 1994.
Oh, how Pitt cool
Martin,
is that?
Stan Mikita, Keith Magnuson, Cliff Coral, Jerry Korab. Our goalie was Murray Bannerman. Al Secord played. It was one of the greatest hockey experiences
wow.
of my life.
I bet.
And speaking of Stan Mikita, this dovetails perfectly into what I've been doing this week, which has been a lot of fun,
uh-huh.
helping with the Stan Mikita Youth Hockey Camp for the deaf and hard of hearing. It's been going on all week out at the Edge Ice Arena, and I've worked with Kevin Delaney, who's the skating coach yeah. for the Blackhawks,
mm-hmm.
and he invited me to come out and help with these kids. I played hockey through college at Marquette, and so I was thrilled to go out. Here's some of the girls on the girls' team. They have all ages and all different skill levels from beginners. There's Kevin right there. And it's been so much fun this week. We've had a blast. All of these hockey players are either hard of hearing or to some degree up to deaf, and including deaf. So some of them sign, some of them don't. But it's been a fascinating experience this week for me, and I've had a blast. And we're going to play an exhibition game on Saturday.
Cool. Where is that?
It's at the Edge, and there will be several former pros and a bunch of the kids who play for this varsity team. It's a great organization, the American
like
Hearing
it.
Impaired Hockey Association. So it's been a great week, and just a great week of hockey for me.
How long has Stan been doing this particular camp? Do you
1973
know?
He started.
Wow.
So it's been a long running, and to see the alumni come back this week and help out. And kids come from all over the country for this camp as well as the coaches who come in. There are coaches from the East Coast, and it's a great experience for these kids to get really exceptional one-on-one training. It's been a lot of fun.
That is cool. I bet it's been a thrill for you, too, to meet your childhood heroes like Esposito and Bobby Hall and Mikita. I mean, just to get to
right.
hang out with these guys now that you grew up kind of
yeah, absolutely.
Idolizing.
It's, again, it's just to me, to be in that sort of atmosphere, to play with those guys in 1994 was something I will never forget. That was an exhibition game against the University of Arizona down in Tucson. And the Arizona coach knew I'd played and said, the Hawks were short. Do you want to play? And I said, are you kidding? Absolutely. So mm-hmm. Reg Fleming was our coach. I'll never forget this. He came into the locker room and saw me and said, who are you? I told him. He said, what position do you play? I said, left wing. He said, great, you're playing defense with Magnuson. So I played defense the whole game with Keith Magnuson. I mean, how much better does he get than that?
That's amazing.
That's cool of you to give back like that too, Joe, to donate your time. And I bet it's rewarding too, just to be with the kids.
It is. So it really awesome. Is. It's been a great week.
Tell us what's coming up on the WGN-TV News tonight. We just have a little bit of time here.
Well, we'll have, just the latest on Sarah Sanders' announcement here. We also have an interesting story about coming out of City Hall regarding the city's workers' compensation fund, how those claims are paid or not paid. The latest from Lori Lightfoot on that, the new mayor. And also we're going to look back 40 years at Disco Demolition Night. You all remember that.
Mm-hmm.
How the Sox are remembering it and how some think we should forget it and move on. So that, and a six-year-old helps save her mother after she had gone unconscious. So just a taste of what we have coming up on the WGN News at 4, 5, 6,
9, and 10.
Yeah.
And tune in at one of those times because you got to see all of that. So thank you, Joe, for checking in with us.
Great
we love seeing
you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe.
Our news is coming up in 2 minutes here, and then we're going to talk with an alderman. If you don't know her name now, you're soon to know her name. Alderman Susan Sadlowski Garza is her name. She is the new chair of the Progressive Caucus, 17 members strong, and she has a lot to say about what she'd like to see for the city of Chicago in terms of her reform agenda. That's coming up in 2 minutes. And Kim Gordon's news. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Justin Kaufman in with us this afternoon.
773 has a good idea. They say to replace Sarah Huckabee Sanders, how about Sean Hannity? The Fox News host, it wouldn't be out of
question. He makes too much money. He gets like $40 million a year with his radio, TV,
he'd be giving back to his country. Maybe he loves his country.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
How about this, Anna? Who do you think would be the right person to represent the White House in that job, the press secretary? That could be, I mean, it's President Trump, so he's not necessarily picking from bureaucrats and people who, he could be anybody from his past, anyone. We've seen a lot of different names in the White House. 312-981-7200.
Oh, they don't like each other anymore.
Oh, yeah, they don't.
But, no, she did that tell-all book, remember? Right. So, no, she's out.
How about Jesse the Body Ventura? Would that be... he's a Trump guy, right?
Tiffany Trump?
Tiffany Trump?
Ivanka? No,
yeah,
she's
how about
got
a family
job.
Member?
Hmm.
Ted Nugent would be a great press secretary.
What about Kim Kardashian? She's at the White House right now.
And Kanye West.
I kid you not, she is there for a, they're hosting events on Second Chances.
Maybe that's what she's there for.
Prisoners. And maybe it's also an interview for the press secretary job.
Maybe she's talking about Second Chance for Prisoners and...
By the way, you know, she'll sit down for
an audition.
I don't know.
Never know.
I don't know. But we will keep you posted on that story should we hear any more developments. But Sarah Sanders is no longer. She's stepping down as White House press secretary. By the way, it's been 94 days since the last press briefing.
Is that right?
So it's quite some time.
That has been a long time.
The new person will have to get right up there to the podium, I think.
Or not.
Journalists. Or not.
Or if it's 90 precedent, you know, she's like, you know, I'll brief you in September.
We want to get a briefing right now by an important member of City Council. And you may not know much about her, but she's an important person to know because she is the new chair of the City Council's Progressive Caucus, 17 members strong. Alderman Susan Sidlowski Garza is joining us, and she is from the 10th Ward. Alderman, thank you for joining us this afternoon on WGN.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Good afternoon, Justin. Thanks for letting me be on the show today.
Hi, Alderman. So my question to you is, you know, we see this a little bit in politics and just at the national level, but a changing of guard when it comes to progressive politics. For you to take over this caucus, what does it mean to you, and how will it be different than it was run the last 4 years?
Well, you know what? First and foremost, I'm humbled and proud to be the chairman of the Progressive Caucus, and I have big shoes to fill. Scott Wagastack is somebody that I admire and has helped me in the past 4 years, you know, find my way. So he was a great mentor, but yeah, you're right. I mean, this city council is a lot different than it was the 4 years prior.
Well, let's talk about that, Alderman, that exact subject, because I want to ask you how we as citizens should expect it to be different. There's a brand new makeup. You have 17 members of this progressive caucus. You've got Wagas back. Sorry?
Yep.
It could be 18?
Yep, I was contacted. Stephanie Alderman Coleman wants to to us as well, so it could be 18.
So growing power, your numbers are growing. Wagas back is now the chair of the powerful finance committee. He's a member of the progressive caucus. You've got a mayor, Mayor Lightfoot, who is all about reform. She wants a new age of transparency. She wants a ton of ethics reforms. She wants to limit aldermanic powers and oversight. What, though, should we expect from you? What kind of an agenda do you think you'll get accomplished and that citizens will notice?
You know, I think that the past 3 weeks have spoke leaps and bounds about how progressive this city council is going to be and how progressive our mayor is going to be. We want to pass the Fair Work Week ordinance. We want to make sure that people are making a living wage by raising the minimum wage to 15. We want to bring the trades and vocational schools back to CPS so people have more opportunities, not just college. I think that there is a whole different vibe in city council. It's really different. And I think that, you know, the old guard is not guarding the gate anymore. Everyone is really working together to make things happen. And it's a really cool thing to see.
Not everybody. You've got a few people who are still sort of going after the mayor a little bit and don't seem necessarily to be about reform, but they seem to be the minority. That's true.
Yeah, and you know what? Here's the thing. No matter what you do, whether it's city council or the neighborhood park, you always have outliers, right? You always do.
And some pushback is healthy, and I think that even this mayor would say that she doesn't want everybody agrees with her, but she certainly doesn't want people who are standing up for themselves and their own profiting off of their political office over the interests of the people. That's the message we hear loudly and clearly from her.
Look, if it's one thing I know, and I can tell you this 100% certainty, in the past 3 weeks since Mayor Lightfoot has taken office, every single thing that we have done so far, I'm chairman of Workforce Development as well, and every single thing that we have done has been collaborative with the fifth floor. That was not the case in the past 4 years. The mayor never talked to me, never asked a question. The doors are open and we're around the table collaborating with everyone. People from outside, people from inside. It's a really great thing to see. That's what democracy is supposed to be, right?
Yeah,
it should be. Let me ask you something else, though, because some of the pushback we hear is from aldermen themselves who say, hey, we know best about what's best for our ward, and we hear from our people directly. And some of the moves right now are surrounding taking away aldermanic prerogative, as it's known, taking away their ability to be the universal decision maker, pretty much, of zoning and issues like that, maybe looking at the budgets that they're given for things like resurfacing. I know the mayor turned that idea down, street resurfacing, and is going to keep that in the alderman's hands. But certainly oversight of the things they're doing, oversight of all of your committees, the Inspector General, Joe Ferguson, is going to have that kind of an audit, be allowed to audit the work of the committees. I don't know. Do aldermen at all feel as if there's too much some looking over their shoulders, or there's too much of this movement to take away your powers?
You know what? I really 3 years ago we tried to give Joe Ferguson oversight, and I voted yes on that. I don't have anything to hide. My doors are open. My windows are open. You can come and look at whatever you want. I think that the aldermanic prerogative for me, I mean, the zoning is off limits. He's going to leave that up to us. But I think that the permits and the driveways and all that little piddly stuff, I don't have a problem with it. The only thing that I have a problem with is that it's going to be inconvenient for our constituents to go downtown to get a permit for a block party. They're going to have to go all the way downtown instead of just coming to the neighborhood office. I see it as an inconvenience for them. But I have the biggest ward in the city, geographically, and if City Hall wants to take on some of these little projects like awnings and driveway permits, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some aldermen do say that that's more of a nuisance. I mean, to have to deal with those types of permits and things like that, although that they're closer to the understanding of why it's needed, because those are the people who show up in your office and they explain, this is why I need these permits. This is why it's important. And there is a lot less abuse that we've seen historically associated with those. Although, I mean, it was at the center of the Burger King situation that the feds were probing. But the zoning, it seems as if that has taken in a lot more scrutiny, because big time developers can help pad the pockets of aldermen in their campaign funds. And then you wonder if they're getting favorable decisions when it comes to zoning, and that there needs to be more oversight centrally. Central oversight of that kind of thing.
I totally agree with you, and I think that the oversight, if we, you know, people need, whoever's working in City Hall needs to oversee what's happening. Zoning cannot be used as a tool to manipulate, or if you don't like somebody, you're not going to give them the zoning change they want. And we've seen that happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
People have used that against their constituents to hold power. That's not right in any way, shape, or form. But I think the oversight needs to come from the zone, whoever's overseeing it. If it's the Inspector General, if it's the Department of Planning, or whoever that is, those are the people that need to make sure that things are done correctly. Nobody knows their ward like the alderman. Nobody. And I'm, what's really indicative to the 10th ward for me, there's a lot of people that have never even been to my ward. No one's even been that part of Southeast. Have you guys been down there?
I was down there this week.
Oh, how about that?
Oh.
What's roughly your ward? Would you tell us what the 10th ward?
Southeast Side.
Southeast Side.
Yeah, Southeast Side, because it's in 7 different neighborhoods. We're the only ward that borders another state. It's Indiana. It's as far southeast as you can go. Our eastern boundary is Lake Michigan. Our western boundary is the expressway. We go from 83rd Street all the way to 137th.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. We have the largest plane manufacturing district. We have the Calumet River. We have the International Port Authority. We have Harborside Golf Course. Were you golfing, Justin?
Yeah, you pegged me, Alderman. No,
I've been to Harborside before. Lovely place.
Metropolitan Family Services for a story, and then I was on 91st Street, and then I was. I'm going to. I don't think this is even Chicago, but I'm going to Eggers Marsh for a story next week, which is right underneath the skyline. Yeah.
No, that's in my ward, brother. Yeah. You better look me up.
Yeah, I'll be there.
You stop by and see the alderman and complain about something that's not paved or a pothole or something like
alderman,
that.
Alderman, my question for you is, yesterday the mayor said that Chicago's going to have to face the fact that we're going to have to raise taxes because of budget shortfall. Mm-hmm. The Progressive Caucus, do you support the mayor's push to raise taxes?
Look, I'm really tired of making the working class people of Chicago pay for all these mistakes. I know pension payments are coming due and all these balloon payments and all these things are out there, right? But we are pushing people out of here. We have to find a progressive reform to find money in other places. There's people that are leaving because they can't afford to live here anymore. I have a friend that lived in Humboldt Park for years and years and years. His taxes were $16,000. Wow. I mean, he had to leave. He left Chicago. I mean, I have people all the time that have been here for a long time. Like, As soon as I'm done, I'm out.
Well, Alderman, that's the issue, I think, is that people largely agree with the progressive agenda in terms of safe schools and in terms of a living wage and, you know, that stamping out discrimination and opportunity for all. It's just this sort of thing is how do you give those types of benefits that people deserve and not drive out businesses and not cut anywhere, because you're going to need to cut, aren't you, in order to achieve these goals, or else you're going to do exactly what you're talking about, go to the middle class and working class people in our city to say, hey, we need more, when they feel pinched.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, we need to do things on the state level. We need to do things on the city level all around. And, you know, the Progressive Caucus 3 years ago introduced some progressive reform to find money. We're going to go back and talk about that next week at our next meeting. So I look forward to sharing that with everyone after we get that done. There's some really great ideas that I think we really need to start looking at.
All right. Alderman Susan Sidlowski-Garza from the 10th Ward, the chair of the City Council's new Progressive Caucus. We appreciate you taking time to talk with us here on WGN today.
Thanks, Alderman.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a nice afternoon. Bye-bye.
You too.
I love when the Sidlowski family is a longtime labor union family here in Chicago, and she has been a supporter of
unions. Dad was a steel worker.
Yep, she's a supporter of unions, but also progressive causes, and she is on, I believe, her second or maybe third term as alderman in the 10th Ward. She just needs to get a better cell phone connection.
I know. I wanted to hear everything she had to say, and I'm so sorry to our listeners, because she is an important person moving forward, especially in terms of, you heard her, the growing caucus, 18 members now, soon to be 18.
She may have broken news there, an 18th member. Yeah. She said, that's what she said, it's 17, and then she said that Alderman Coleman is thinking about joining. So maybe we got maybe, I don't know, if that could be a Rokon show exclusive.
Right, we might need to get that out. Give that to the AP Wire. All right, we're going to talk more coming up here. Ali Mariotti is going to join us coming up. She's going to tell us all about how it went, the autonomous vehicle that took to Chicago's streets, in particular, the Kennedy. It was out there, and it was doing its thing, and how did it all go, and stuff like that. But first, let's check in with Kim Gordon, see what's coming up at the top of the hour here on WGN. The Rokon Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. We've got Justin Kaufman in this afternoon. Yeah. As well as taking the afternoon off. And we were asking our listeners, thank you for submitting your suggestions for a Sarah Sanders replacement.
Who would be the best press secretary for President Trump? Could be anybody. 630 says, how about Megyn Kelly?
Ooh. Hmm. I say Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman. That's
great.
A good one. 815 says Sean Hannity or Tucker Carlson would do it for free.
Mm-hmm.
773 says, how about William Barr? He's already doing it anyway. That's pretty good. That's great. 224 says Bozo.
Oh.
That's, come on now.
We've got Jim Acosta, someone suggested.
That's good. The Swedish chef.
Not sure he'd...
847 says Dr. Seuss. I'm not sure who Dr. Seuss is. 708,
Seuss?
Kid Rock. Dr. Seuss would make sense, but this was spelled Zeus, like the god.
Oh,
Dr. So maybe there's like a, maybe that's a medical show I'm not watching on HGTV or something. Kiefer Sutherland, designated survivor. I'm not sure. A pile of dog excrement. I don't know. That's not possible.
Thanks for the creative options.
I didn't give them parameters or boundaries.
And maybe we should have. Apparently, we should have done that.
It needs to be a human being who can speak. And the best 1815 so far, okay. Rod Blagojevich.
Oh. When is he out again? Maybe he
can pardon
make
him,
it by the end of this
get
month.
Get him out and then get him up on stage and he could be your representative. So who do you think?
Crazy things like that will never happen in this administration. How dare you suggest
dare it?
Right. Red Line Rivalry. We've got a live. We've got Join Us Live. We'll be broadcasting live the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis.
Oh, fun.
John Barley. You can come too, Justin.
I can?
John Barleycorn. You know the place. 3524. Well, you can sit a few rows back and just pretend you're not with us, but you can be there. No one's going to stop
That's
you.
Fun.
3524 North Clark, Tuesday, June 18th. That's coming up this Tuesday. We will be broadcasting the show live from 3 p.m. to 6:30 p.m., off a little early that day. You'll have the chance to win tickets to the Wintrust Crosstown Series, July 6th, a guaranteed Great Field, courtesy of Wintrust, giving away a pair of tickets every hour, starting in the 3 p.m. hour. Visit the WGN TV. We're going to have a photo booth out there, pregame photos, details, WGNradio.com/events, sponsored by Wintrust, presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series, and also sponsored by Arquidec. Got to get that in there, too.
That's going to be so much fun. That's radio at its finest.
Well,
when you get a chance. There's going to be so many people. It'll be chaotic. You guys are going to have a blast.
Just the energy of that series. It just, there's nothing like it. So come on out and join us. Come on out for the game. It's going to be a fun, fun time. Kim's News coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Kim's News in 2 minutes. The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Justin Kaufman in this afternoon, and thank you for all of your suggestions for the replacement of Sarah Sanders, who says by the end of the month she's out as White House press secretary.
All right, so we had suggested to the WGN listener, hey, who would you like to see replaced?
Who do you want?
847 says, how about Don King? He'd be a great promoter, hype guy.
He's a very good promoter.
847 says, Gilbert Gottfried. I'm not sure how Gilbert Gottfried, but you get up here.
We had suggestions for the Mooch. Diamond and Silk came up. Jeb, exclamation point, also.
630 says Glenn Beck, which would be Tim Allen comes up. John Stewart, which is kind of weird. I don't know if he would do it. My favorite by far, 309, Ron Burgundy.
I like that one. Rahm Emanuel, someone said.
224, how about Robert Kraft?
Oh, my gosh. Tom Brady. He's too busy. He's got a lot of stuff to do.
630 says Melissa McCarthy. 815 says, how about David Hochberg? It'd be fun listening to him yell at the reporters. when David gets all that worked up, loses that breath, and he just, let me tell you about this right now.
The Mooch, another one who's known to get a little worked up. John Barron, another name that came up. Remember, that's the name that President Trump was known
to use
when he called certain New York papers to kind of say he was a publicist for Donald Trump, but he disguised his voice.
847 says Gary Busey.
Oh, good suggestion. I don't know where that one comes from.
That would be good. So lots of good ones.
Keep them coming because we are going to continue to cover the story. And Kim's got the news if there is any replacement name. I don't know if that's expected to happen today. Probably in days to come, but end of the month, Sarah Sanders will be stepping down. We have some important news to get to here because we have Ali Mariotti from Chicago Tribune is joining us. We've talked about autonomous vehicles so much and the expectation that they'll be arriving very soon and we'll start seeing them everywhere. There was a test here on the Kennedy.
This week,
Ali was in that vehicle. And I'm not sure I would have been totally comfortable yet because I'm not really comfortable with the whole idea yet, Ali. But how did it go?
It went well, and I wasn't scared at all.
Not at all. Not even for a minute. When there was something in the road or something there, you're like, I'm not sure if the car sees it. Did you think about that?
So there was a driver behind the wheel the whole time. Yes. So
just
it wasn't. Yes. And really, you know, what our first people's first interactions with driverless cars won't actually be driverless. You know, more likely we'll see manufacturers starting to introduce lower levels of automation and gradually increase that to the point where, you know, it's this futuristic things that we envision, like hailing a cab with no driver and those types of things. But we kind of have a little ways to go before that happens.
Ali, what was the experiment? What were you trying to accomplish with this ride on the Kennedy?
Yeah, so we were in a Ford Fusion, and it was demonstrating the technology behind the automation, right? So I was with a company that's based here in Chicago called Here Technologies, and then another company that's based up in Minneapolis. And so it was their technology. They make these high-definition maps for vehicles, And the maps are sort of like, you know, creating a 3D world in the computer, and that sort of tells the car what it needs to know about the road, right? From the direction, information on the signs, to upcoming exits, all of that. So basically what they showed me was how that mapping technology can tell the car to change lanes, or it can drive without the driver. So the driver actually took his hands off the wheel at one point, and it was, we were staying in the lane. The wheel was, like, adjusting itself as needed as we went around curves.
Were you scared then, Allie? Not at all. Not at all. You were fine.
I asked him if it was weird to not have his hands on the wheel. He was like, sometimes I just have them on the wheel because I don't know what else to do with them, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Look at his phone. This is the one time he could text, right?
I don't think he was going to do that when I was in the car.
No. Allie was watching.
Right. So then when he changed lanes, all he did was, you know, turn on the turn signal, and the car sort of waited a moment and then made the move. So it was interesting.
So these 3D maps are basically telling the car everything that's around them virtually. They're reading everything from stop signs and speed limits and exits and work zones to the markings on the pavement to know when you're in a lane and when you're not, to know where other cars are and trucks are and the size of different cars and how fast they're going. Because eventually we're moving toward this scenario where the cars will be talking to each other, kind of this pack mentality, and that's important, isn't it, in terms of the next generation?
Right. So if you think about, so there are cars now that have lane assist technology and all that will keep you in the lane, you know, and help you change lanes and kind of beep if there's a car in your blind spot. But the difference here is that those are using typically sensors or cameras to monitor the perimeter of the car. Ultimately, self-driving vehicles will use those sensors and cameras, but with this mapping technology that they were showing me, it's actually that's helping make the car make decisions, right? So imagine if there's like snow on the road and you can't see the lines, or some situation like that, right? It's kind of helping them learn the car knows the rules of the road from this technology.
So this technology is able to see when there's snow covering the lanes, or we're
right, because it has all the information compiled into the technology. So the car automatically knows the rules of the road. It doesn't need to see the signs because the signs are all built into this map.
Here's the question I always have. Okay, so when you're driving, a lot of things can happen, right? So if you see a paper bag go across the street, you just ride over it, right? You're like, all right, that looks like a paper bag. I'm going to keep going. If it's a dog, you're not going to do that. If it's a glass bottle that's broken, I'm not going to do that. Right. So you're making judgments as a human being, and there's so many other circumstances I'm not even getting to there, that how does the technology catch up to that piece of things?
I think that's something that still needs to happen, right? I mean, sort of like there are basic decisions that can be made that technology is working towards, but some of the more ethical stuff, I think it's going to be farther down the line. And one of the experts I was talking to was telling me that, you know, there are other things, too, to think about that need to happen before we're actually, you know, taking a nap in the backseat while the car drives us places. You know, some of that is infrastructure. Some of it is regulations that haven't caught up. But this expert was telling me that the allure of freeing up time in the car to do something other than stare at the road is really strong, and ultimately that could help speed up adaptation. So I think it's going to be an interesting mix of, you know, the things that are holding the technology back and the things that are pushing it forward.
You mentioned that initially the first generation that we'll likely see, you will have steering wheels and you will have people behind them. It's just the car will be performing more functions for you, but that eventually it would move into the steering wheel-less environment. But I just wonder, once this first generation comes, if your car's already doing a lot of it for you, even though you've got the wheel in front of you, do you sort of get complacent and you sort of start thinking, yeah, the car's got it. The car's got it. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah. So one of the experts I talked to, he was saying that some of the stuff we're already seeing, like if you think about the parallel parking assistance or backup cameras, those things are helpful in getting people accustomed to the deeper levels of automation, because I think that's something, again, with that convenience, it can happen really fast, right? Like you can get used to it really fast about this car driving you around. At first, it's a little weird, but there are things already happening to get us kind of used to that. And he was saying that once that happens, once people feel like they're in a passenger car that's being driven by another human, except the human's not there, then the embrace of the technology will kind of be complete.
Mm-hmm. Allie, there seems to be, there's two things here. The autonomous vehicle, that ship has sailed, meaning that that is happening. That is something right. that the industry is already investing in, and we see in some cases already on the roads. When you're talking about this technology and being able to 3D map and use high-definition maps and do some of the things Anna was just talking about as that technology improves, will that be something that you'll see the auto industry sort of merge, or will it be a second or third party attachment, meaning will this technology that you were observing today or this week, will it be used when you buy the car, when you buy go to the lot and you buy or you know have an autonomous vehicle, this part of it, or are we going to see these as two separate industries?
Yeah, that's a good question. We'll see it as part of it. So this company that's based here, it's called Here Technologies, like I said, they work with automakers around the world, including Mercedes-Benz and BMW. And, you know, the representative that I was speaking with couldn't disclose specifics, but he did tell me that some of their partners were working to incorporate that technology into, you know, consumer vehicles that would be coming out, you know, in the coming months and years. So I think, you know, it's not just like, it's going to develop in silos, right? Like this is right. technology that we'll all be seeing and getting used to. And then I think eventually we'll start seeing the driverless cars. And there's a lot of different discussions going on about what the uses will be. You know, will it be shared vehicles? Will it be, you know, obviously Uber's working on it, that sort of thing. You know, it could go in a lot of different directions.
Yeah. Allie Moradi is our guest from the Chicago Tribune. Just quickly, I want to just get your assessment because you sat in this autonomous vehicle on the Kennedy. You were part of this test drive of this new 3D technology. Do you feel that very soon, when these are more readily available, more out there, and we're seeing them on our roadways, that it is going to be safer? Do you feel that that's going to be an outcome here?
That I don't know about. You know, the experts say yes, they will. That's one of the allures to this. The Here expert that I was speaking with, he was saying that if you think about cruise control, you know, that's a function that kind of rolled out first in high-end cars and now is ubiquitous. It's a standard function. It makes things safer so you don't speed, right? And he was kind of comparing this to that, right? Anything that can help with safety or comfort, he said there's a demand for that, mm-hmm. and this is something that this automation does. So we'll have to see.
Yeah.
Allie, my last question is just the merge situation. Did the autonomous vehicle get into the lane that was merging early, or was it a jerk and get all the way to the front and then force everybody to stop?
No, it didn't. It wasn't jerky at all. It was
all
smooth. And they told me that the technology is accurate down to the centimeter, I think. I was paying attention, though. We were staying right in the middle of the lane most of the time. So okay. It was interesting.
All right.
Allie, you're so good. Calm. You're the perfect person to be in that seat because I would not have wanted to be in this. I'd be like, no, stop. Is it going to stop? You got it? You got it? You got it? Are you sure? You see that, right? You see that? It's like, you can't do that, though, because you got to let it all happen.
You got to let let the computer not be stressed. The computer gets stressed. Right. You can't let the computer get stressed.
Thank you so much for sharing the story. You can read your article, actually. It's very informative in the Chicago Tribune. Allie Moradi, we appreciate
That's great.
It. Covers a lot of transportation issues.
I would need an autonomous vehicle to be able to not only handle the road, but the radio. Like, I would need it to know that the Taylor Swift song I just heard doesn't get repeated when I flip the station. Like, I would like it to have some smart programming to be like...
Well, you can do that. You can program...
Yeah, you don't want to go to this radio station. It's Taylor Swift again. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Wow. Thanks, computer.
You
That's
can
what I need.
Set up your likes and dislikes, and they'll only play the stuff you want. Right? You can do that, and you can tell your Siri to play what you want.
Why
do
that?
It's all happening. It's all happening, Justin. Ready or not? Have you tried the whole thing where I test drove a vehicle that actually parks itself?
No.
And I was like, that's really freaky because it did an amazing job, probably better than I could have done.
The one thing I want to know is, does a computer put its arm outside the window when it's nice out, roll down the window, and then put the arm and let it dangle outside the door? Is a computer doing that?
It needs to.
Yeah.
Darn it, there's a lot that needs to happen here before I'm going to be comfortable, but we're going to continue to follow that. We're going to check in right now. Kim Gordon has got what's coming up. Bottom of the hour here on the WGN News.
Friday, the Cubs head to Tinseltown. It's Baez versus Bellinger in an L.A. story. Cubs-Dodgers Friday nights at 9, WGN-TV.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlance. It's Justin Coughlin in this afternoon. We do want to get this in. Very important. It is the Red Line rivalry. Join us at John Barleycorn Tuesday, next Tuesday, June 18th. We'll be broadcasting live. The whole show will be out there 3 p.m. is when it starts. You'll have the chance to win tickets to the Wintrust Crosstown Series, July 6th, guaranteed rate field, courtesy of Wintrust will be giving away one pair of tickets every hour, starting in the 3 p.m. hour. It's all sponsored by Wintrust, presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series, and sponsored by Architect of Chicagoland as well. We've also been following your suggestions for Sarah Sanders' replacement, as she is stepping down as White House secretary, press secretary.
Yes, we have a ton. We can get to them after the news, but they're such great
really,
recommendations.
Some thought
there
going
are a couple.
This.
There are a couple that are thought provoking. I'm like, ha! Oh wait, that would be good.
Any that you think could actually really
I
work?
I think so.
Because it seems like there's a lot of jokes.
There's a lot of jokes, but you know what? It kind of fits. So you know, it's not like the Trump administration has been so serious in their.
Picks
like,
for every office.
Yeah,
right.
414 says, how about Howard Stern? And I'm like, ha, well, that'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. She says that it's been an honor of a lifetime and that she's stepping down. She's going to be enjoying spending time with her three young kids again and that it's been hard and challenging. The president calls her a warrior.
A warrior.
That's what his name was. The words he used at that press conference just when he announced it moments ago, not too long ago at the White House. She stepped down very graciously, I will say. But it's been a long time since the last time. What is it, 94 days since she's had a press conference at the White House? So the new person's going to need to step up to the podium pretty quickly.
Imagine that President Obama would get up and say, John Carney was a warrior. Or President Clinton would say, I want to thank George Stephanopoulos. He was a warrior. Mm-hmm. It's a weird word to use for someone whose job it is to communicate with the press.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of weirdness going on. Have you noticed?
Warrior.
But it is. It'll be interesting. We'll read some of your suggestions coming up, but we want to get to the news and the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Here is Kim Gordon. It's the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis, Justin Kaufman in this afternoon as Ro is off. So thank you for all the suggestions. Sarah Sanders stepping down as White House press secretary today. And keep them coming. A couple other ones here.
224 are set two in a row. 224 and 331 both say Vince McMahon.
Mm.
They're really going
Linda
for
McMahon
that.
Is the Small Business Administration chair. Right?
Yeah.
She's head of that.
Exactly. Vince McMahon. How
Good
about
friends.
269 says, how about Don Jr. and Eric?
Mm-hmm.
773 says, how about Mancow?
No.
Okay, I don't know
why that came up, but okay. I think he's going to go with someone he knows, and loyalty is key to the president.
Look,
we know that.
To the job, Mancow.
If you are someone close to the president. Sean Hannity, a lot of people have said, what seems to be trending
Sean
online
Hannity.
That people think he would be an excellent replacement since he sort of does
says,
that job already.
Well, since we're doing radio people, 309 says, how about Ro Khan?
Ro could do it. I don't think he would last very long doing that for the Trump administration. I'm not sure. How about Triumph the Insult Comic Dog?
That'd be awesome.
That guy.
630
we
says,
had him
about,
on the show recently.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
Christopher Walken, Willem Dafoe.
Mm-hmm. Diamond and Silk also suggested.
There you go.
Rahm Emanuel. He's working for an investment bank now, so I don't think he's available, and I don't think he would do it for the Trump administration. Ron Burgundy also mentioned.
Yeah, that would be
Charles
good.
Barkley.
Oh, that's good.
How
there
about that?
Go. Yeah.
John Barron.
And how about 630 who says Pinocchio? That would be great entertainment.
Dennis Rodman would be very entertaining. We get a few votes for Dennis Rodman. And Stephen Colbert, of course, and John Stewart, right? Also has come up.
Chris Christie, 414 says Chris Christie. 815 says, how about Rosie O'Donnell?
Yeah.
I think we got the winner.
Happen.
We can stop the game right
okay,
now.
Okay, let's hear it.
We should give something to 630 for this one. Roseanne Barr.
Yes.
How about that? Roseanne Barr finally
medicated
gets the job.
Medicated or not? That's the question.
Well, right.
I would say not medicated.
Does she get to tweet
Raw.
At night?
Yeah, which Twitter page is she using? Because she now has a lot, right?
I think she goes official White House. She takes over the White House Twitter feed. And I believe she gets up there and she give her and no podiums. She just gets a mic like a stand-up.
Uh-huh.
And you just let her go.
Oh, my gosh.
And you let her freeform. They don't even give her any notes. Let her freeform and see what happens.
Okay. Yeah.
And you give her a piece of gum before she gets up there so she can do it.
She can do that thing she does.
Smack the lips. All that. I want quintessential traditional Roseanne.
Her on social media would be dangerous, I think.
Right.
But I think the president would love it, right? Because that's the sort of thing he likes. He likes that sort of face-off mentality.
We call it unleashed.
Mm-hmm. Roseanne Unleashed.
Yeah. Unleashed.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Well, no replacement has been named.
What about Roseanne Raw? You got to go with the alliteration.
Roseanne Raw. Monday nights.
I mean, it would be kind of like WWE, right?
Yeah, right. You get Vince McMahon, who has a rotating cast. I'm really digging on the Roseanne. She's got some things to say.
That may be the best suggestion.
She kind of got shut off, you know? She did the Valerie Jarrett tweet, and then everyone shut her up. She lost her job. She couldn't talk anymore. So she's got other things to say.
Well, that's why she has so many fake Twitter pages now.
Right.
Is she known to... I didn't know she was known to have that. I thought she pretty much put herself out there her name.
No, she has admitted she has multiple false accounts.
Because she's afraid to tweet under her own name now because people criticize her for outrageous and sometimes racist things she says.
Just the thought process alone for Roseanne to be like, I need to get out there on social media. I need a fake page. Like, where are we at where Roseanne's just deciding she needs to, you know what, I'll do a fake page. I'll do a couple fake pages. She wouldn't have to do that anymore. We'd give her WhiteHouse.gov.
A license to say whatever she wanted because I don't think the president would,
We'd give her the White House Insta. Maybe a Friendster. Give her the White House Friendster. Does White House still have a Friendster?
Brian Altimer has that sound where she explained why she has the fake accounts.
Twitter got you in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Have you rethought in the last year and a half, are you rethinking about how you're going to use it? Maybe you're going to have somebody that monitors how you use it, a 10-minute buffer before you could tweet anything.
No, I have a lot of, troll accounts. So I say what I want under anonymous name.
So that's how you get it out really without getting yourself in trouble, then you use the troll accounts?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I say the stuff I want to say.
Do you do all the tweeting on those accounts, or does somebody else do it?
I do it all. I think everybody's got troll backup accounts, really.
Everybody? I do not. Does anyone on the show have trolling Twitter backup account?
No, because I'm an adult, and I know how to be nice to people.
That's exactly it. Like, the idea that somewhere along... isn't the whole concept of the internet of where it breaks bad is anonymous troll accounts? And Roseanne's like, everyone's got one.
Yeah, sure.
All of us celebrities got one. The idea that there are celebrities all over Hollywood right now with troll accounts being like, well, check this out. I'm going to say what I want to say, finally. Roseanne finally gets to say what she wants to say under I Hate Roseanne. I don't know, whatever troll...
It's unbelievable.
It's ridiculous.
It really is. But, I mean, not far-fetched to think that might be a candidate. We'll have to see. The president hasn't named any candidates yet. The only thing he did was mistweet or made a mistake in his tweet earlier when he said, after 3.5 years, Sarah Sanders Huckabee is stepping down. Of course, we know that didn't happen unless Obama hired her. So 2 years and 4 months, she's been on the job, and she says she's stepping down. She wants to spend a little more time with her 3 young kids, and this is a grueling job, but the honor of a lifetime. And, she is at the end of the month.
What?
Done.
The president embellished a tweet? What?
Yesterday, didn't he say the Prince of Wales? Whales? Isn't that one that caught people's attention yesterday?
The Prince of Wales. Both the gray whale, the blue whale.
Yeah, which one? The BBC had some fun with that one for sure. They're like, whales? Really?
I'm really digging on this Roseanne idea. I don't know about you guys. Everyone out there, just think, I know at first you're like, no way, but how great would it be to have Roseanne up on that podium every 94 days or whatever it is that they let the White House press secretary, the warrior.
We have Sandra Oh, someone suggested. Actress Sandra Oh, I've seen her in so many things. She's really good. He says because she has a bewildered look on her face most of the time and fits perfectly with the Trump administration. So that's out there. Ted Nugent, another, we'll vote for him. Ventriloquist dummy Charlie McCarthy. Church lady. Yeah. Church lady would be good. Isn't that special?
815 says Kim Jong-un would be good.
We had a caller who said Putin earlier, so that
there you go.
Is out there as well. All right, well, we are going to break here. And then the other side, we want to talk about something happening in Lake County. There was a big controversy out there. The Lakewood Forest Preserve, every year, for years now, has hosted a Civil War reenactment.
27 years,
right? Long time. 3,000 people they expected this year to come out. Thousands of people come out every year. They say it's well attended. People enjoy it. But this year, strong pushback, a lot of controversy. People say it's not appropriate to reenact the Civil War. We'll talk a little more about that coming up here on WGN Radio. But let's check in with Kim Gordon and see what's happening top of the hour here in the news. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Justin Kaufman in this afternoon. And we're looking forward to your calls on this one, because I think this will, this has already ignited such a controversy in Lake County, and it is something that people feel very passionately about on both sides. Civil War days, they go on every year, 20-some years.
27 years in Lake County, this particular forest preserve.
Thousands of people come out at Lakewood Forest Preserve near Wakanda every year, and they reenact Civil War. Now, this year, in particular, I think there have been other, there's been talk in previous years, but this in particular got heated because the president of the Forest District Board, Angela Kyle, who is African-American, he says that this is about, this is reenacting a war over the enslavement of African-Americans. This is not a piece of history to be reenacting. It is, you know, it just, he doesn't like the whole idea of it.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, they had canceled it this year. They said, no.
To. Yeah, then there were contracts and contractual engagements, and he said, okay, we'll do it this year, but this is it. This is the end.
This is the end of that whole thing. He said that we would have gotten legal action if we decided at the last minute to call all these people who had contracts with us and whatever. But this year, this will be, quote, the final Civil War
days. Turn in your uniforms.
Take it out of the history books, too. I don't want kids exposed to this in school.
Oh, here we go.
But, you know, that's the that is the issue that comes up every time when you talk about this kind of thing, whether it's renaming Balboa or removing the monument that's in the Soldier Field area, you know, his connections to Mussolini and fascism, and should that monument been removed or should it be renamed? There was a movement by city council at one point to say, let's scrape off his name and put on another one, or any monuments to him, any talk about him.
Yeah, I wonder if it does come down to whether or not you're honoring or you're, like, in the case of the monument. A monument is to honor the tradition or honor the legacy or honor the man or the movement. And if it's a fascist movement, maybe not the best thing to have a statue that in itself is to honor.
What was
that.
A gift from Mussolini,
right.
And he himself is not someone.
So I'm not really
sure.
I've never been to Civil War days, so I don't know specifically if this is a history lesson, if it sheds light on some of the darker, uglier parts of the Civil War and exactly why we were going to war at the time, why our country was ripped apart. If it's just let's all dress up and get out there and I'll wear gray and you wear blue and then we'll have some hot dogs afterwards, maybe the Forest Preserve president is right, because it's not just the Forest Preserve president in this case. There are others who have called this out, groups, other social groups, people like that, Black Lives Matter, have called this out around the country, that not unlike the statues that are in the South, that the reenactments of these of this war is not something that we should celebrate this war, because it was a really awful time in our history.
If you're not required to go, though, and it's sort of a reenactment of an actual historical event, and that's kind of what it is. I think the battle scene in particular is the part that draws the highest numbers of people to see this particular piece of history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they pay attention to the details of history. If it's perfectly represented, I don't know. That was some of the pushback, too, that it's not all exact. But it is a piece of history. And if you go out there and you reenact that, and is that
in
itself
bad? I think it's a great debate. I think it can be a healthy debate about whether you think it should be reenacted and celebrated, or if you think it should just not be. I just want to know more about, if you are someone who reenacts in that battle, like, how do you do it? Does someone come up to you and say, you're going to get shot, fall down, count to 15 and fall down? How does it work?
I think there are people who do this. I mean, they've done it for years, and
I've heard great pieces. I remember a great documentary on, but just the idea, like, that's the part I don't understand. Is it just a free-for-all? You pretend like, pew, 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 and you can run around and capture the flag? Or do you have a designated role where you're like, all right, Jeff, you know what? 15 seconds, you're the one who's going to get splattered by this cannon. Cool? Yeah, thank you. Cool. You know, like, how does it work? That's what I want to know more about. But we could talk about the serious nature of whether or not we should be doing reenactments, but I'm more interested in the acting part of the reenactment.
To Kevin's point, I think this has sort of become, it gets to the point where, do we erase all of history because these were people who don't necessarily represent the values of our time? Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. Do you erase him from Mount Rushmore? Do you take him away from all the monuments that you see across every city in America? Does that get removed? I mean, it just sort of... It feels as if you're reenacting history, and that's what the people who are trying to do here is not glorify slavery or anything like that, but they're trying to reenact something they've done every year.
Let's go to the phone. Let's see what some people have to say. Let's go to Pat. Pat, you're on the line. Pat, what do you think?
Oh, sorry about that. We got to turn Pat up in order to be able to hear him. Hey, Pat, I'm sorry about that. What are your thoughts on
this? Well, I used to be a history teacher. I'm not now, but I'm an Italian-American, and every time they put The Godfather on TV, I don't get bent out of shape and say that this is not good. It shouldn't be on TV. It's an insult to me and everything else. First of all, I'm tired of the political correctness of revisionist history, okay? The Civil War was not fought simply over slavery, okay? There was a movement. If you study your history, and I did a thesis on this, there was a whole group of people, not both in the North and South, that wanted to get rid of Abraham Lincoln. They finally accomplished that near the end of the term, all right? And that was basically a political war because of the difference between states' rights and a unified union with the central government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now there are other reenactments. There are the reenactments of the Revolutionary War when we took Yorktown from Cornwallis. There's a revolutionary from the War of 1812 in Louisiana. So, you know, Mr. Angela, what's his last name? I'm sorry.
His first name is Kyle. I'm sorry, I just got to grab it. It's Angelo Kyle is the last name.
Okay. Mr. Kyle, I don't know if this is a political position that you that he gets elected to or whatever it is, but, you know, it's the political correctness gone amok again, and he's grandstanding. And from what I understand, as I called the Forest Preserve today, and that's my opinion, they're inundated with this stuff. If you've never been to one of those reenactments, they have beautiful camps. There's a Confederate camp. There's a Union camp. There's kids, things for the kids to do. You can buy things there, like certain outfits. Everybody's dressed up. The tents are there. They explain how they did all sorts of amputations without any type of anesthetics and things of that nature. The animals are there. The horses. It's fabulous, okay?
So as somebody, Pat, as somebody who understands history and is a student of it, do you find that it is fairly accurately portrayed in terms of you could learn something about history by being there and witnessing it?
Yes. Actually, the enactments of the different battles, okay, are extremely accurate as to how many people died and who won that particular battle. And the one that's at the Lakewood, every year that I've been there, it's the Confederacy that won that battle, okay?
Yeah.
And it goes back and forth, and they actually have grandstands there. They have grandstands.
Pat, we appreciate you weighing in. We do want to get one more call in before we have to break here, and we thank you for your perspective. It was a good one to hear, so thank you for calling in. We want to ask Glenn at this time to tell us what you think about, and you have thoughts about this too. Glenn, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? I love the show. I am an African-American, and I totally agree with the last caller, Pat, I think his name was.
History.
Here's my thing, you know. I'm sick and tired of all the political correct belly aching going on. I say let them have their fun. You know, I mean, like the guy said, the Civil War was not completely about slavery. It was about, you know, it was political. So I say let them go on.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there was something that glorified slavery about it, I haven't heard anybody saying that. I mean, it just seems as if their goal here is to reenact history. That's my understanding of it. I've never been to it or anything like that. I don't think lines are crossing that way. Thank you, Glenn.
Thanks,
for
Glenn.
Your perspective.
You know, the callers, the texters too, just to balance, the 309 says, if you think about it, the Confederacy were enemy combatants to the United States. That's one of the issues. It was a revolution or this idea of a civil war. And then, 630 pushes back on Pat's assertion that it wasn't just about slavery. This was really the primary reason for leaving the Union. Was about the right to own slaves. So there are some thoughts about that, you know, playing out.
Thank you both for our callers, and interesting discussion.
Yeah.
Kim Gordon's news coming up in 2 minutes. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Justin Kaufman is in this afternoon as we approach that special time of day, you know, the top 5 at 5 time of day. Quickly, though, Texas governor signs a bill to protect kids selling lemonade after police shut down yet another one. How many of these do we have to hear? I think every state should just say, that's okay. Here in Illinois, the rule is, by the way, a couple years ago, they passed this. Kids can have a lemonade stand as long as they don't make $1,000 or more. All right? So they, if you
almost
hit that
like
number. I know, right?
Right?
Like that's.
I thought this was a capitalistic society. I thought the idea
well,
of you're encouraging
it's okay,
that.
But go get a permit then. If you're going to, that's like a business. That's like official business.
It's socialist.
See, this
garbage.
Is the way it goes. This is what we have to do. But we have other
millions.
Things to do at this moment. So let's get right to it. How come that always dies from
it's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go. It's
one more time.
The top five on the
I got it. Don't worry. I got it.
Let's go. Three, two, one.
It's eight. It's
okay. I got to stop. We're done. I'm so. Okay.
It may be.
We're officially done with it. I'm sorry. There we go. Thank
now,
you.
It's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, we will.
I think it's the touchscreens. You're not good with the touchscreens.
No.
I've noticed I sat in with you a couple times
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's
think
it?
I think it's maybe it's the size of your fingers. I don't know.
Okay.
If maybe it knows Ro's fingers.
Well, let's try this one. Checking in at...
Number five.
That one worked.
It works.
See? It's not that hard.
I mean, you had to hit it three times.
Yeah. Shortly after, it's easy, don't worry, we got this. Shortly after announcing her departure in a tweet this afternoon, President Trump complimented outgoing Press Secretary Sarah Sanders at a White House event this afternoon, saying she's a very fine woman, a great person, and a warrior, also hinting at a possible future run for office. Sarah Sanders also took time to speak this afternoon.
This has been the honor of a lifetime, the opportunity of a lifetime. I couldn't be prouder to have had the opportunity to serve my country and particularly to work for this president. He has accomplished so much in these 2.5 years, and it's truly been something I will treasure forever. It's one of the greatest jobs I could ever have. I've loved every minute, even the hard minutes. I have loved it. I love the president. I love the team that I've had the opportunity to work for. The president is surrounded by some of the most incredible and most talented people you could ever imagine. And it's truly the most special experience. The only one I can think of that might top it just a little bit is the fact that I'm a mom. I have three amazing kids, and I'm going to spend a little more time with them. In the meantime, I'm going to continue to be one of the most outspoken and loyal supporters of the president and his agenda. And I know he's going to have an incredible 6 more years and get a whole lot more done.
Again, with that word loyal. It's
well,
a weird word for her to use.
He demands loyalty. I think
he does. And also, she didn't say that. I think it's the first time ever. She did not say the word witch hunt. And I did not hear her say fake news. And I was waiting for both those words with the bell ready.
She's going back to Arkansas and leaving at the end of the month. So no replacement has been named. But thank you for all of suggestions.
We have some suggestions.
We've got quite a few. Yeah. Checking
Number
in at.
Four.
Thank you, Orion. In an ABC News exclusive, George Stephanopoulos spent 2 days with President Trump getting his views on everything from the latest poll numbers to gathering information on political opponents from foreign governments. In this exclusive interview, Trump said he is open to the idea of foreign governments offering him secret intel on election opponents.
Number four.
Your campaign this time around, if foreigners, if Russia, if China, if someone else offers you information on opponents, should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think maybe you do both. I think you might want to listen. There's nothing wrong with listening. If somebody called from a country, Norway, we have information on your opponent. Oh, I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it.
Wow.
That has been the headline, I think, of that two-day interview. That's a lot of time to spend, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know what to make. I mean, I want to act flabbergasted. I want to act, I can't believe I clutch my pearls that the president would say that after everything this country's been through for the last 2 years. But it's right on par with, he just says what he wants to say, and I think his supporters are used to it, and they kind of laugh and chuckle at him. And there's a little bit of him gaslighting the country, being like, I don't care what just happened. It just, as a leader, you wanted him right there to go, of course not. I wouldn't do that. As we just proved in this Russian investigation that wasted our time with Bob Mueller, I didn't do that, and I wouldn't do that.
That would have been easy out, wouldn't it, to go back to that?
Yeah, but he's like, brings up Norway.
David Axelrod, I did 150 campaigns and did not accept oppo from any foreign government, much less an adversary. Let's not pretend this is normal. So that seems to be the pushback on it. The president is suggesting that Democrats would do the very same thing had it been offered to them and have, you know, sure, maybe well done that themselves. There's a little more here. So that's not all.
The attorney general said you didn't commit obstruction of justice. Robert Mueller said he's not reaching a decision, could not exonerate you. And he laid out all that evidence. More than 1,000 former federal prosecutors.
Oh, that's for the old politician. Hey, George, look, I know more about prosecutors than you'll ever know. They're politicians. I could get you 5,000 that would also say that there's nothing. I saw the names, and these are all, many of them are Trump haters. Many of them, if you look at the names.
Many Republicans,
I could get
too.
You thousands. You know how many prosecutors there have been over the, if you add them all up? We could get you thousands of prosecutors.
You even saw Lindsey Graham and Mitt Romney, no fan of the president. Mitt Romney is saying that you can't take dirt on your opponents and you need to shut this down for 2020 because it's a mistake and it's a mistake of law. So they are also saying, nope, no, this is not okay.
And back to this, that quote right there, which is so interesting, is that he's talking about Robert Mueller in that case. He's saying, oh, there's so many U.S. attorney or federal attorneys, former federal attorneys that can get you thousands. But in this case, it was Robert Mueller who actually said those things. He was the one who initiated and authored the report. So it's not just some guy who used to work in the Northern District of Illinois who's picking up the phone going, let me put down my sandwich. Yeah, I think he did a bad job. It's the guy who wrote the report.
Yeah.
So I just find that different. It's just different.
We are going to take a break right here. Check out what's coming up bottom of the hour in the WGN Radio News. And then we'll come back to your 3, your 2, your 1 in the top 5 of 5. Then we want to talk about the Dominican Republic because a 7th person tourist has died there, an American. And we have a reporter who has been following that story as well. Kim Gordon.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. and stick around for the latest shopping, entertainment, and events, and see Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN TV.
All right, Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. I have Justin Kaufman here with us, and we are on number. We're getting through the top 5 at 5, and now we are
number 3.
That's Cuba great, you did it.
Was that good? I think I'm getting better at this. Cuba Gooding Jr. is under arrest for allegedly groping a woman in a Manhattan bar after following through with his plan to surrender to the NYPD, and he did that this afternoon. Cuba turned himself in, and the Manhattan Special Victims Unit. He arrived with his attorney, Mark Holler, where he was booked for forcible touching, a misdemeanor, and he's cuffed in some of the pictures I see. So that's sort of an interesting situation for a misdemeanor. You don't see that all the time. Last night, Cuba explained himself and what had happened to TMZ.
Cuba, those are some serious allegations against you.
Yes, sir.
You know, anything you can say about them?
Let me first say, let nothing take away from what John Stewart said about our first responders. Yeah. That's the first, most important thing. The second is the trust the system.
The trust system
and the process speak for itself. There's a tape that shows what really happened.
Uh-huh.
That's the most important thing. But let's not take.
Yeah, he says there's a videotape out there of the bar that night that actually exonerates him, and it's in the next clip here, so let's listen in.
What really happened? Can I ask?
I was at the club, I left, I met a bunch of people, I said hello, I took pictures, and, you know, you have to have faith in what people say.
Was there any groping involved?
Nothing.
Nothing?
And you have to remember that.
Could it have been misconstrued when you were taking a photo, you put your arm around somebody and said, is that possible?
What I'm going to say is the following. In this time and age, we have to let people speak for themselves.
Okay.
We have to let people feel.
And that's why I'm here. I'm letting you speak for yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm going to give you that chance to.
And now I'm giving the process the chance to show and what went down.
So he's given the process the chance, cooperating, turned himself in. Again, perp walked with the handcuffs by the Special Victims Unit in New York today. So on a misdemeanor. That seems unusual, but we'll see what happens there. If he does have a videotape that is exculpatory, then potentially he is going to be okay here. But we'll follow that. Checking in at
number 2. Little pigs, let me come in. Not by the hair on your chinny chin chin. Then I'll huff, and I'll puff, and I'll blow your house in. Here's Johnny.
Whoa. Chills. Ooh. A whopping 42 years after Stephen King's book, The Shining, was released, and 39 since Stanley Kubrick's beloved except by the king himself, film adaptation. The first look at the long-awaited sequel finally arrives, adapted from the 2013 King book of the same name, Dr. Sleep, follows a now-grown Danny Torrance as he grapples with his family's history of alcoholism, his supernatural abilities to shine, and a cult of power-sucking vampires. Mm. Ewan McGregor stars as Danny in the new movie, directed by Netflix, House on Haunted Hill, Helmer Mike Flanagan.
You're magic, like me.
I need you to listen to me. The world's a hungry place. A dark place.
Hi there.
I only met two or three people like us. They died. When I was a kid, I bumped into these things. I don't know about magic. I always called it the Shining.
Shining was so good. It's one of those movies you just hope the sequel can do it justice, right? That is really good.
Yeah, that's amazing they're doing that.
It is. We're going to talk to Richard Roper. He's going to have reviews coming up in the next, at 6 o'clock. So 6 o'clock, yeah. We will potentially ask him about that. I think he'll be reviewing that coming up next week. I'm hearing from our producer. But he's seen it, and he's seen some other movies we'll be talking about coming up. Let's check in at
number one.
During his monologue last night, Stephen Colbert joked about former Vice President Joe Biden promising during a campaign stop to cure cancer if elected president.
If I'm elected president, you're going to see the single most important thing that changes America is we're going to cure cancer.
Okay, that would be great. That would be great. It's touched his life. It's touched so many lives. Please. But if you can cure cancer, could you maybe just do that now?
Because help us out.
You know, people might. Let's not hang
like
this.
To see that.
President or no president, people might vote for a candidate who promises to cure cancer, but they would definitely vote for the guy who's already done it.
Yeah. How about that? Great point, right? I promise I'll do it, but, we could use that help now, I suppose. But it's interesting because it's heating up. You've got 20-some Democrats running. You saw Beto O'Rourke take aim at Joe Biden today, saying he's the old school, he's the time gone by, and you see them all, the divisiveness sort of setting the stage for a pretty rough primary.
The idea that that's what you would run on, the idea of curing cancer, and you're particularly going after an older demographic, it's not the worst campaign strategy. I mean, essentially what he would be doing is prioritizing with the CDC and the medical communities and research facilities and put more money in from the government.
Well,
but
I'd like to hear
being,
that.
But the point being, what a great concept to run on. Especially when you're trying to differentiate yourself from the others. So Beto O'Rourke kind of falls into that category. He's the old school. I would bet a lot of our older generation saying, that's okay. I want to hear what he's got to say.
Well, let's hear what he has to say. I mean, because I feel as if, is he the only guy who can do that? I mean, if that research is there, if those minds are there, then
I don't know. It's all about prioritizing dollars. You have to give the research community tons and tons of money to be able to do that. And so far in this country, we have not done that. As we've done put a lot into research into other places, but it sounds like Joe Biden is saying, I will prioritize this, maybe over military, maybe over universal health care, maybe over immigration,
right?
Whatever it might be, but he's saying this is one of my priorities.
Yeah,
not a bad way to campaign.
We'll see more from Joe Biden and many other of the Democrats coming up. Let's wrap this thing up right now, and to do that we have to do that right there. I'm gonna press that button right. Oh, I got it. Don't worry, Justin. I got it. It's time for the news. Sponsored by Team Hochberg. Here's Kim Gordon. It's the Rocon Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Justin Kaufman in studio today for Ro, as he's taking the day off today. You know, I don't know why I'm still sort of taken aback by the Cuba Gooding Jr. being perp walked in handcuffs for a misdemeanor. Yes. Not that what he did, if he did it, is wrong, but he's. He hasn't stand trial yet, and it's a misdemeanor.
And
last I checked, R. Kelly's still walking back and forth to court every day.
Point.
And this happens. So
the idea of being in handcuffs and walking in front of the cameras, do the whole bit over a misdemeanor charge, it seems pretty excessive.
He turned himself in.
And he turned himself in.
So, all right. All right. All right. Doesn't make sense. But here's something else that doesn't make sense. We want to talk about the Dominican Republic because you've heard the news about how there have been several U.S. tourists who have mysteriously dropped dead. Their family is very concerned at this point. A seventh person has also died. If you watch the show Shark Tank, it's Barbara Corcoran's brother, John Corcoran. He's a businessman who, I guess, regularly went to the Dominican. He also died in a hotel room like many of the others. Are they connected? I don't know. We're going to find out more about what we know about what has happened in the Dominican. Jackie Heinrich of Fox News has been covering this story. And Jackie, what do you know? What can you tell us?
Hey, guys. Hey. Yeah, you know, as much as you might want to look at this announcement from Barbara Corcoran on her Instagram, you know, confirming that her brother did pass away and the State Department did confirm that, I wouldn't necessarily put one with the other, because she walked back speculation that it might have been the same kind of mysterious pattern that has been killing U.S. tourists. She said in an Instagram post that her brother had a heart condition and that they believe that he died of natural causes. Now, we don't know if he happened to die at the same hotels where the other six people died. There are a total of four hotels on the island where people have died. Three of them are owned by the same company. And so without knowing where it happened, where his death happened, people have had some question. And obviously, you know, you hear about a seventh person dying, especially a high profile individual like that.
Right.
Suddenly quick to draw conclusions, but she tried to sort of stamp out any speculation in that post, anyway, right, that it might have been the same thing.
You know, it's interesting because some of the families have now hired attorneys and they are speaking out. And they're saying one attorney in particular represents one of the families and says, look, most of them, these victims now, or these people, these U.S. tourists who have dropped dead in the Dominican Republic in hotel rooms, most of them have taken drinks from the minibar prior to dropping dead. And then you also have the case of these the husband and wife, I believe, who were there, who both dropped dead of similar symptoms.
Right.
Which is so strange.
Same cause, same time, same room. You know what's interesting about the minibar thread? So three of the six people who died, according to their families, all had drinks from the minibar and then either died suddenly or didn't wake up. And we have a reporter on the ground, Griff Jenkins, in the Dominican Republic, and he went to the Hard Rock, which is one of these hotels where I think two of the tourists died there. And he was able to get video of the minibar in the room, not necessarily in the room where someone died, but video of a minibar in a room. And what was interesting about it is they're not miniature bottles at all. They're not single use containers. They were basically full size bottles with like a nozzle pour that was positioned upside down, and you would press a cup up into the nozzle to have it release, a pour of out of the drinks. So he showed that video to a distributor who said this is highly unusual, that they appeared to have been refilled. Now, I don't know if you remember, it was a couple years ago now in Mexico. There were 30 some odd hotels that were raided after people were getting sick from grain alcohol, unrefined or not legal, basically, being used in some all-inclusive resorts in Mexico and getting people sick. And they ended up seizing a lot of illegal alcohol that was being given out to people staying in these hotels. Now, we don't know that that's what's happening in the Dominican Republic. But we do know that the FBI is involved, that they're certainly going to be looking at these mini bars, so to speak, and examining the alcohol there, because it's unusual to have a container that's not a single-use container in a room.
Seems easy to tamper with if that is at least something worth checking out here.
Yeah. Jackie, at one point, the Tourism Bureau in the Dominican Republic said that the FBI and the CDC were on the scene and they were helping out in the country and they would get to the bottom of this. You've spoken to some of these the U.S. agencies. Are they?
Yeah, you know, that was a weird one for us. So the Ministry of Tourism issued a statement, and keep in mind, the Dominican Republic gets 2 million tourists each year from the U.S. 65% of their tourism comes from North America, and the majority of their tourists come from the U.S. So they've been quick to stamp out any, I guess, backlash from this, or they don't want people to cancel their vacations. They're obviously concerned about folks, but they've also got their business to worry about. Mm-hmm. So the Ministry of Tourism issued a statement saying that the FBI and the CDC were doing health tests, epidemiological testing on site at the facilities. I reached out to the CDC to be like, what are you testing for? When are you going to see the results? Is this, you know, an illness or some kind of a pathogen? What's going on here? And the CDC said, we're not there. Now we've got to go back to the Ministry of Tourism and ask them to further clarify what they meant when they clearly said in a press release that the CDC was assisting in this. So you don't want to, you know, cast right. any aspersions here, but it is a strange thing to say that a U.S. health agency Absolutely. Is in another country looking for the answer to this when, in fact, they're not.
Yeah, it's suspicious, if anything. But here's a question Weird. For you. Couldn't this be easily figured out a remedy or at least give a little bit more evidence to what happened with basic autopsies? Wouldn't we be able to know from blood work, from toxicology reports, if indeed it was something like it was in Mexico with grain alcohol?
So, yes, you would. And we're waiting in all of these cases, to my knowledge, that on the toxicology reports to be delivered. We had basic autopsy results, but blood work takes a little bit longer, up to a month. Thing is, though, one of the women who died in 2018, Yvette Sport, she had a drink at the minibar at the Hard Rock, never woke up. Her family says that they've been waiting on her toxicology report for a year now.
And that is being conducted in Dominican?
Correct. In the Dominican Republic. A year. So now we've got some other families of the more recent folks who died, like Miranda Shope Warner, for instance. They want to bring her body back because they want to make sure that these tests get done in the United States and there's not some information being suppressed that could maybe hurt tourism or scare people from coming to visit the country.
So, yeah, absolutely, right? That would be the concept. If you're waiting and or you're stalling on toxicology reports or you're stalling, you would need to know this. I mean, it seems to me like that's not medically appropriate or the right way to go about these things.
Well, it seems like the Dominican Republic relies so much on tourism that I could see they don't want this to get out of control.
Yeah.
But at some point, handling this responsibly would be the best way to approach it, because if it becomes like a drip, drip, drip that looks like they're making stuff up, like the CDC is here or we're doing toxicology or autopsies that kind of take too long to be done, people start wondering mm-hmm. what it is they know. I mean, it doesn't seem like the right approach here in order to calm people's fears about visiting.
Well, you know, we can say that the FBI is there. The Ministry of Tourism said the FBI was there. FBI confirmed that they are, in fact, there. And the State Department has been monitoring these investigations from day one, I believe. So now that you've got especially six families looking for answers, I would imagine that those tests might be a little more accelerated. It takes about $20,000 or $30,000 to transport a body from out of the country back home. So that was one of the prohibiting factors for the folks last year. Now that we've got this fresh string of people dying and the FBI involved, I would imagine that they'd want to get those test results turned around pretty quickly and that there's going to be additional oversight as opposed to what it looked like maybe before the FBI was on this. Mm-hmm.
Jackie, there's been a little bit of confusion because there was a question of whether or not there was a call for anyone who had visited the Dominican Republic dating back even further to come forward if they had any issues, but it doesn't seem like that's accurate.
I had not heard that. I mean, it's possible that someone put out that call. If they have, it's not something I've reported on. Just before we started this segment, I was talking to one of the producers before we went live on the show and mentioned that might want to, you know, get an answer to that. And I was like, I haven't heard that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking it up on a quick Google search right now. I don't see anything. That's not to say that there hasn't been that call issued, but as of right now, I think the focus is on waiting for those toxicology results, waiting on something from the FBI and hopefully, you know, a clear answer from the Ministry of Tourism as to why they would suggest, well, actually not even suggest, outright say that the CDC is there on the ground when CDC says
I saw the very same reports and I thought, oh, okay, well, they're cooperating and they're totally welcoming that kind of scrutiny. But geez, to make something like that up, or it seemingly so, it just seems, again, the wrong way to approach this entire thing. There's also the stories of violence coming out of the Dominican Republic, totally separate from these issues.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know you've been covering those too. Is there any kind of guidance from the State Department about what they want Americans to do at this time?
Well, I think the, you know, most recent violence is Big Poppy. I mean, Big Poppy getting shot at a restaurant, you know, murder for hire situation, obviously, you know, rattled people, and, you know, he's like a national treasure, at least in Boston. So that obviously was putting a big spotlight on that country and making the people who are doing investigations there kind of filling up their plate with a lot to handle. State Department has maintained a level 2 travel advisory for people considering going to the Dominican Republic, which means basically that there's an increased risk of crime, violent crime. I believe there are 4 threat levels. So it's not like prohibitive, but they're just telling people, you know, be careful. I would add to that, though, TripAdvisor, the vacation comparison website.
Right.
So they have the Bahia Principe Resort on their website. They have suspended reviews, and they're encouraging tourists that were planning to visit those hotels, the Bahia Principe chain, 3 locations on the island, telling folks if they've got a vacations plan there, you might want to do some additional research, just given all of the reports in the media about what's going on.
Hmm. And are all of these, the 7 people we're talking about, were they all at those related hotel chains, or are some at different hotels?
So 6 deaths happened at 4 hotels. 3 of the hotels are owned by the same chain. Now, that chain, it's a Spain-based corporation, and they put out a statement on the 7th, I believe, slamming the media, saying they completely disagreed with inaccurate and false information being spread in the media, that their reputation has been damaged, that some of their 15,000 hotel employees' lives have been threatened. They plan to take legal action where appropriate, and that they were cooperating to the fullest. You would expect for a hotel in a PR situation like this to be like, you know, we're cooperating. Of course, we have condolences to the family. You know, we maintain that we have the highest standard of, you know, service, yada, yada, yada. But slamming the media for inaccurate and false information, really coming out strongly against this, you know, questions that people are having after a string of people drop dead in these hotels.
Right. Tell us what to say. What if without you know, right?
Right?
Bring out the facts and don't mention lies like the Center for Disease Control is there when that's a provable falsehood. It just seems, again, handling it wrong. Jackie Heinrich, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed on this. It's it is troubling, really is. But thank you, thank you for the news, because she's been following every moment of this, and I know she's. It's just amazing to think, you know, that
it
kind
is.
Of stuff.
Yeah. It's tough. A lot of folks have a lot of questions, but thank you guys for having me.
Thanks
Jackie.
All right.
All right, we've got Kim Gordon's news coming up at the top of the hour, and then Richard Roper's reviews. He's got a lot to review. He says something like 10.
Men in Black.
Yeah, Men in Black, and then a zombie movie with Bill Murray.
And Adam Driver.
And Adam Driver.
Driver's in that movie. What a combo. I love that combo.
I love the combo. I just don't understand the zombie thing with Bill Murray, but he's going to explain it all to us. Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right.
Hey, Lauren, I got something for you. When we were doing I don't think she's up there, but and Kev might get this too. When I was doing John Williams, we were talking about Thunderstruck and whether or not they still play that when the White Sox come out, because there had been some conflicting reports. They change it up here, there, and wherever. And I'd been at a game last year where they just didn't do it. And I went to the game the other night and they did it. So
they did do it.
Yeah, they did it. And I was like, yes, I got so excited. And it might have been too excited, meaning my family who I was with, they were like, why are you so excited about the song at the beginning. I'm like, they don't. This is the best song ever.
Why were they not playing it?
Gets you going.
I think that they do. I think there's sometimes that they skip it for special things or whatever. But you know, we were talking about that. So.
And we also talked about how Thunderstruck can also be a drinking game as well.
Yes, right.
Thunder.
Take a sip.
Oh, learning so much from this program.
Thunderstruck.
It's a wealth of knowledge. This is awesome. I have to do that. So the Thunderstruck song I do like. It does get you going. I mean, that is like...
It's a great sport. It's the great because the White Sox take the field. The fireworks go off. It's the beginning of the game. It's so exciting. And that'll be happening tonight as the White Sox coming up. They're playing the Yankees. How about that?
The Yankees games. I love it. Oh,
are you someone who's going to look for the Yankees to come to town to go to?
I tried to go to see the Sox last year, and I didn't know they were playing the Yankees, and it was crazy. And it was really hard. You know, like you couldn't sit that close. A lot of the seats were taken, and it was a little more expensive.
Do you, Kev, think that's because it's New York, or is it because people like the lore of the Yankees? What is it about the New York Yankees coming to town?
I think it's just the Yankees. They're maybe the most popular sports team in the world, right? Couldn't you make that argument?
Yeah, you could, but I mean, this year alone, you know this, and they're winning their division, which is amazing, but their whole lineup is hurt. All their superstars aren't playing, so it's like
Stanton,
you're going to watch minor leaguers play.
They're still just loaded with talent, though, when you go see them play. And they've still somehow first place in the AL East.
I know.
All right, keep listening now, and between now and 6:30 for your chance to win a pair of lawn tickets to Ravinia on July 12th to see the Oscar-winning film West Side Story with the score performed by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. That's coming up here on WGN Radio, the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. But Kim Gordon's news is also coming up in 2 minutes. It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. We've got the Justin Kaufman in the studio. We've got the Richard Roper in the studio. And Richard Roper is sponsored by Arkadek and all of his reviewing. And I got to turn Richard's mic on so we can actually hear from him there.
Thanks, Arkadek.
Nope, still no. Now?
Thanks, Arkadek.
Now it's working now.
See how it's working now? That's
fantastic. Got a couple of bugs on that. Hey, Rich.
How you doing, man?
I saw your social media post that, like, hey, you got so much going on.
I think... The most reviews I've ever written in 1 week. I wrote 11 or 12 this week. So we're going to pick and choose, guys. Right. So I thought we'll start off with a couple of the big ones. Men in Black International. It's like with Mission Impossible, but they put that colon in the middle. Mission Impossible, more money for crews. This is Men in Black colon International.
But no Will Smith.
No Will Smith, no Tommy Lee Jones. Spoiler alert, too, for people who are wondering. They don't show up at any point in this movie, okay? I'm going to spoil it for you because I don't want you to see this movie anyway. You know, the first Men in Black movie was 20 years ago. It's amazing when you think about that. And at the time, the special effects were really cool. And what I liked about the first one in particular was that Tommy Lee Jones played it as straight as if he were playing Lieutenant Gerard in The Fugitive, which made it so funny. And then Will Smith was doing his Will Smith thing, you know, the brash young kid who was learning at his feet. But that gave the story some heft, you know? It made it kind of, in a weird way, it was funny, but also like, okay, maybe these Men in Black are really out there with the neuralizers. The problem here this time around with Chris Hemsworth, a.k.a. Thor, and Tessa Thompson, who was in the last Thor movie.
A.k.a. Valkyrie.
Yeah, Valkyrie, right. Who I like a lot. I think she's terrific. She's also in the Creed movies, for people who don't know that, the Michael B. Jordan love interest, if you will. She's wonderful in that. Chris Hemsworth, in particular, is so intent on showing us how funny he is, and he can be funny. It kind of reminded me of like when Roger Moore was sinking the Bond movies. Remember that?
I liked Roger Moore.
Daniel Craig resuscitated it. Even Pierce Brosnan in a way, but especially Daniel Craig, because again, he was, you know, he gave us the gritty Bond living in a world where there was real peril. And if you've got Chris Hemsworth, who's like beyond the perfect looking human being and all the humors about how he can just wink at the aliens and he even has like interspecies, you know, romances and stuff, we lose all the fun of the action, and the action's kind of disappointing.
I feel like with Chris Hemsworth, we've seen him now in Ghostbusters. We saw him in the Avengers movies playing Thor.
It was in the Vacation reboot.
Yeah,
it feels like Hollywood
loves that he's funny.
Yeah,
and they're getting away from the fact that he made his name on being an action star.
Yeah, and he is a great action star. And Justin's absolutely right. And you just know that he's sitting there saying, "You know, I'm very funny in Australia. When I was coming up, I was on soap operas and game shows, and I was much funnier than just good looking." And they all go, "Okay, Chris. Okay, I want to be like The Rock meets Arnold meets Adam Sandler. Give me some of those projects. Exactly. And they're giving them to him.
Like,
and,
yeah, it works.
And that's fine, but this lacks any heft. I gave it 2 stars.
Yeah. All right.
And I think I'm being kind on that. It's one of those franchises. It's been almost 10 years since the last one, and the last one wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
It feels a little desperate on Hollywood's
part. Okay, the one part about what I grabbed my attention was that both of the stars do play off each other in different movies. Mm-hmm. Meaning Bethesda and Chris are in Avengers. They were in the Ragnarok.
Right.
I was thinking in history, I was trying to roll back, like, are there points where people were stars in other movies where they ended up in different franchises?
It's interesting, because in both, well, in his case, you know, he's been pretty well known. Tessa Thompson's got a great career going. She's also in The Westworld on the HBO.
Yeah, right.
I mean, she's wonderful. I still say on the rise in terms of her career. I think in this case, it's more just coincidence. I do want to share a clip from here.
Oh.
This contains some of the best dialogue from Men in Black International.
Press the button. Turn it up a few.
That's it.
Oh, great.
That's our clip there.
Wait,
for
so
you.
She's a woman in black?
She is, yes. Yeah. And for,
even in the Men in Black, and she's a woman in black.
Yes, and for the second time in as many weeks, we get the, you know, obligatory, seems like it's crowbarred in, patting themselves on the back, feminist statement. First, we got it with X-Men, where the characters goes, what about the X-Women? And now in Men in Black, they go, what about the women in black? And then, the super, we're working on it. It's like, okay, we get it.
He's
a super feminist. How much did Chris Hemsworth make as opposed to Tessa Thompson? Let's talk.
Yeah, right. Well, then, you know, that would be an interesting comparison.
So stay away from that one. 2 stars, guys.
The heck away from it.
Right. Do you want to talk about Late Night?
Yeah.
Now, this is interesting, too, because we have another Thompson, Emma Thompson, who's also in Men in Black International, and if you happen to see clips from the two movies, you'll note that she has the exact same haircut, just different color. So you know she did these movies like in the same month. Now, this one we like. I'm going to tell you that in advance. I'm giving 3 stars to Late Night. And we love them. I love Mindy Kaling.
I do,
I just
too.
Think she's terrific.
She's a favorite.
And as you guys may know, she wrote and produced this, and it's loosely based on her own experiences, because when she was 22 years old, she was flat out, she'd be the first one to say this, she was a diversity hire on The Office as a writer. They had all white men, and they looked around and said, you know, we should change this. She joined mm-hmm. the staff as a writer, soon became a featured player, became a producer on the show. In this movie, she plays someone whose last job was at a chemical plant, but Emma Thompson plays a late-night talk show host. Even though it's a woman, she's very Letterman-esque. She's in her, 29th year. She doesn't want to have the YouTube stars on her show. She won't go out on the streets and do the bits anymore. She's resting on her laurels. And she's told one day, you know, you have all white men and you've never had a woman on your writing staff. So she hires Mindy Kaling, who's got all the check marks. And here's a clip. This is Mindy's first day on the job as a writer for the late night talk show.
I don't know. Maybe I should move back to Pennsylvania.
Can I give you some advice? You need to shut up.
Excuse me?
If you hear something you don't agree with, you have to resist the urge to give your opinion.
I will not be marginalized by the iron fist of white privilege that pervades this work environment.
I am not trying to silence your strong female Indian woman of color spirit. Hashtag me too, trans is beautiful, blah, blah, blah. You're still a new writer with no experience. You need to stop giving advice and write something. You're a writer, so write.
I love that scene.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
feels very
tell,
honest.
You know, they're making their statements here, but, you know, really doing it within this kind of soft. It's really almost like a rom-com. It's, you know, plays like that, although the romance is really just between Mindy and her job and her situation. Love her.
The trailer has a great scene where she walks in and she goes to sit down, and they like, you can't sit there. Someone else is sitting there. She's like, I'll just take the trash can. I'll sit on the trash. It's very comfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
She sits on the trash can. I'm like, that's great.
Good
that's
for
funny.
Her.
But Emma Thompson is great as this cold, distant, you know, institution who's basically being forced out, and like, she'll go into the writer's room and says, like, you know, well, where's Malcolm? And like, he passed away from pancreatic cancer 6 years ago. Oh, did I send a card? I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah. So 3 stars for that.
Three stars.
I like the fact that it does make points about, you know, Me Too and women in the workplace, but it's also just really kind of light and entertaining. And Mindy Kaling, I mean, she reminds me of like Mary Tyler Moore throwing
her hat
in the air in this role. She's so fun and so
And
cool
where do we
so
see
smart.
This? Is this major theater
this
release?
This is a major theatrical release. I hope it does well. I hope people see Late Night instead of Men in Black International, which will dominate the box office. But I don't think it's going to be a huge hit. Dark Phoenix bombed last week as well. Because it was terrible.
good. It's good to hear that, like, you know, they don't just
sometimes word of mouth and critical consensus can help.
I agree.
Steer people to the good movies. Go to the good movies.
Go to the good movies. They'll make more of them.
Go to the light. Go to the light.
Stay away from the Men in Black. The Men in Black.
Exactly. Thank you.
All right, Shaft. Do we want to go to that one?
Okay, let's do that.
Samuel L. Jackson is in Shaft.
Yeah, you know, here's
20 years
one.
Later.
No, here, yeah, here's another one. It's been almost 20 years since the Samuel L. Jackson Shaft, which was in 2000. Now, the original Shaft was 1971. Richard Roundtree, and you know, he was a bad mother. Shut your mouth. And that was actually a really well done neo noir kind of, you know, blaxploitation. Maybe the best of all those films. The only thing that's really held since then is the theme song, which is still the Oscar-winning score from Isaac Hayes. So now we're at the third generation Shaft, and we've got young JJ. His dad, he has not seen since he was a baby, and young, the third Shaft generation, this kid is MIT educated, you know, very kind of soft, very different from his dad, but now he needs his dad's help in solving a crime.
What is wrong with you?
You picked up a bat.
You can't beat up a woman.
Why not?
Because she's a woman. That's like misogynistic.
You the one being misogynistic. I ain't mentioning her gender.
Okay.
I'm an equal opportunity ass whooper.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. This movie is homophobic, Islamophobic, misogynist for sure. And just dumb as well.
So overall, a summer blockbuster.
It'll go great globally. It's so bad, and it's so disappointing to see this because you know you do have you know the three generations of chefs. Kind of an interesting idea, but the script feels like it was dusted off from 1975. And then they take like shots at people that don't need it, deserve a shot. Sam Jackson character keeps questioning his son's sexuality because the kid is well dressed and nonviolent, and he actually calls him Don Lemon at one point because that's an insult, I guess, because Don Lemon's gay and well dressed. And I'm like, how did they let that get into this movie?
How?
Don Lemon is a bad mother. Shut your mouth. So 1.5 stars. Shaft is terrible.
Oh, gee. I'm sorry.
You can hear it drip from your voice.
Oh, man, I couldn't believe it.
The disappointment.
My buddy Michael Phillips, my cohort over at the Trib, he didn't even review it because there were so many movies this week. He goes, you know what? I'm not even going to bother with it, but it's really bad. That's it. That was his
Does
tweet
that
review.
Happen?
Michael actually did. He's like, I can't write about it. You write about it.
it's
City's
on
all
you.
Yours,
it's
Rich.
On you.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
All right, we're going to take a break here, and then we'll come back with more of Richard Roper's reviews. We still have the zombie movie with Bill Murray. I don't quite understand, but
the
you'll
dead
just,
don't like, die.
Dead don't die. A zomcom, as it's called, right? From a rom-com to a zomcom.
Yes.
We'll find out if Bill Murray is good coming up, but let's check in and find out what's happening the bottom of the hour in the WGN news. Oh, my gosh. All right, well, Richard Roper.
Go see Rocket Man! Sorry.
Doing his reviews.
Yes.
And you said the non-Will Smith Men in Black with a woman in black gets 2 stars.
Yep.
Late night rom-com, 3 stars.
Yes,
Mindy Kaling.
We like that one.
Shaft, 1.5.
Terrible.
Samuel Jackson, awful, 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 awful. The Dead Don't Die,
the
a
don't
zombie
die.
Movie
it's
with Bill Murray.
Zomcom, as you mentioned Zomcom. Here. So Jim Jarmusch, who's always been an interesting director. Justin, I know you love his work, right? He once did a movie called Coffee and Cigarettes, which if you have a chance to check it out, it's this amazing series of vignettes, including one in which Bill Murray plays Bill Murray, but he's working as a busboy, a waiter in a diner.
And Murray always goes back to Jim Jarmusch.
He loves
they
him.
Always
yeah.
work together.
So The Dead Don't Die is a zombie movie. It's set. It's very much kind of like almost like a Twin Peaks type of thing. It's very deadpan in more ways than one. The fun conceit here is that Adam Driver and Bill Murray, okay, they play the small town cops in Centerville.
What a combo.
And because of fracking, the earth has fallen off its polar axis and all kinds of weird things are happening. The sun's never going down. And now the undead are starting to walk the earth. And one of the cool things in the movie is that Adam Driver is aware of the fact they're in a movie from the start. Bill Murray, not so much. So at one point, Adam Driver keeps saying, like, I got to... feeling something's really going to go wrong. And Bill Murray's like, why do you keep saying that? He goes, because I read the whole script. And then Murray says, you got the whole script? I only got the sides with my part in it, so I don't know what happened. So it's one of those kind of things if you're into it.
A little meta.
Yeah, very meta. So here's a scene. Chloe Sevigny also plays a young police officer. She has no idea she's in a movie. And this is her with Adam Driver and Bill Murray as things are starting to go really bad and zombies are starting to walk the streets.
Guys, shouldn't we be telling each other that it's all going to be okay? That this will all go away like a bad dream? Ronnie?
Gee, Mindy, I'm not sure I can say that.
Cliff? Please?
It's all gonna be okay, Mindy. Maybe it'll all just go away like a bad dream. I doubt it.
Because he's read the script! So, you know, if you're zombied out, this is kind of a fun, like, almost antidote to that because of the fact that they're kind of aware of it and still has some really
And it plays, fun it social. Works th- like that?
It does.
That can go one way or
that
the
can
other.
Get old. I mean, yeah. It could be a great SNL skit, right. Justin. You're absolutely right. Uh-huh. And it does have some, it, you know, on the social commentary, it gets a little heavy-handed at times, but, you know, who better than Steve Buscemi to play a crazy, racist, paranoid farmer wearing a red hat that says, Make America White Again, just in case you're not getting the message at one point in this thing. But I liked it. Dead Don't Die. Three living stars.
Three stars. All right. So go see The Dead Don't Die with Bill Murray. He's always good. We love Bill Murray.
We love Bill.
And then also see Late Night.
Yes.
Avoid The Shaft. Avoid the Men in Black. Both
exactly.
of those. Goodbye.
Exactly.
No way.
There you go.
We have just a few seconds here. Euphoria on HBO.
Yeah,
I've seen so many trailers of this. This is heavily promoted.
Yeah. And we can talk about this maybe a little bit more tomorrow as well. But Euphoria is an HBO series. It's getting the Parents Television Council is warning everybody about it. They haven't seen it. It's a limited series about teenagers who are deep into sex addiction, drug addiction, violence. It's very much like a movie called Kids from the 90s or Less Than Zero from back in the day.
Yeah.
It's the kind of movie, you know, like a lot of parents are going to see it and really want to check out their kids' phones, even though they know that they shouldn't, but maybe they should. I think it's great. If you watch it and see it all the way through, it is not glamorizing or glorifying drug use or any of this stuff. You got to watch it all the way through. And Zendaya, who started off as a Disney Channel star, and then we've seen her in the Spider-Man movies and other things, is the star of this, and it is a revelation how good she is. She is on her way to becoming a huge star.
Greatest Showman, too. That's right.
Greatest Showman. Yeah, I mean, she's only 22 or 23.
Gosh.
So she's young enough that we believe her as a 17-year-old. But also veteran enough to handle the heavy, heavy scenes here. And she is Emmy-worthy in this film, in this series.
It's hard to watch because it's so real.
Oh,
and
man.
That it's like what it's like to grow up today.
In this day and age. We get a lot of backstories on these troubled kids, finding out what happened to them each time. We go back to when they were 11 years old and we find out certain things about them that kind of explain why they're on the path they're on. But, I mean, this is intense stuff. There was a young actor, rapper, who actually quit the show halfway through filming because he didn't feel comfortable with some of the scenes he had to do with some violence toward women and stuff. And he goes, I know it's acting, but it's not for me. And they actually had to replace him and reshoot the scenes. And I respect that, too. You know what I mean? But again, if you check it out, Euphoria on HBO, it's not just this gratuitous, heavy R-rated, sensationalistic look at teen life. It's a slice of reality.
Is it something appropriate for teens?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I mean, if you're 16 or 17, you know about this life. Not every single teenage character here is on drugs or, you know, promiscuous. There are a lot of other storylines as well. And Maud Apatow, who was the daughter of Judd Apatow and Leslie Mann, is terrific in this as well, young actress.
All right.
Really good cast.
Richard Roper, we'll see you tomorrow. As well.
Awesome.
Thank you for that and
Thanks,
much
buddy.
More to talk about tomorrow because, as you said, very busy week it is.